Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on General Government. We are today discussing with the Department of Revenue House Bill 5041, which is their budget bill, and we have the property tax program. Is that first on the agenda? It isn't Karen that's getting. Oh, okay.
Good morning, Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. For the record, again, Elizabeth Harshenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. Today we plan to begin with the property tax program, and here to present that information is Karen Gregory, who's the administrator of the property tax division.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Jensen, morning, Senator Whitsitt. I am Karen Gregory. I'm the property tax administrator for the Department of Revenue, and I'm here to chat with you today about the Oregon property tax system. Yesterday you heard about the income tax system, which is the revenue generator for the state general fund, and today the property tax system will be our conversation, and it's the generator for all of the local county and local government funding. If you would turn under the property tax tab to page 43, that's where the presentation begins, and the first page 43 shows you where services are paid with what services are paid with property tax dollars. Each dollar provides the county with 19 cents, education 46 cents, cities 25 cents, and special districts 10 cents. There are a number of functions that the Department of Revenue provides that contribute to the property tax system. Those are listed on the next page: the utility and transportation valuation, industrial property valuation, mapping, county administration oversight, and forest land valuation. And we'll be chatting a little bit more about those in just a moment. But working together with counties in the state, we provide the system that supports and generates $8.6 billion in property taxes projected for the 07-09 biennium. And those dollars will be going to fund schools, counties, cities, special districts, and urban renewal. There are a couple of other taxes as well. We have a small owner timber tax providing $424,000 and a forest products harvest tax, which provides $25.6 million. So what I am going to chat with you about today is basically our property tax function and how those are divided between the state and the county. I'll talk with you about our partnership between local government and the state in this regard, valuation, as well as our mapping and our ORMAP project. I also will chat with you just very briefly about the federal forest funding shortfall that is a potential for counties losing $230 million and the impact that that may have on the property tax system in Oregon. So, getting started, the system today, it's a primary source of the funding for all of the local governments. And the voters approved a number of tax rate limits for property taxes. We have caps on education at $5 per thousand of value. General government has a limit of $10 per thousand of value. And, of course, all of the tax permanent rates for all local governments are fixed. Property is taxed at the lower of market value or an assessed value limit calculation that is specified in Measure 50. And the assessed value is limited to growth at no more than 3% per year unless there are additions, if you put on a new patio or you add a barn or something like that. What I'd like to do is move you to page 49, which is our property tax tree metaphor. And this...
Mr. Chair.
Senator Whitt.
Thank you. On page 44... we have a total of $8.6 billion in property taxes collected, and $4 billion of that goes to the schools. But statutorily, you have to $5 is the maximum for schools, and $10 is the maximum for general government. So one-third of that should be to the schools, and certainly four is more than one-third of 8.6. Could you explain that to me?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, 46% actually goes to schools out of property taxes. It includes bonds. It also includes junior colleges, all of the school system. It's not just K through 12. Does that help?
And the $5 limitation is for education or just for K-12?
Mr. Chair, Senator Wood said it's through all K, it's all of education.
We can check that, Mr. Chair. Maybe I could make could add something. Those limitations, the $5 and the $10, are for operating levies. The schools and the local governments are allowed to levy outside those $5 and $10 limits for any bonds that they issue for construction or improvement. So that would take the dollar amount above the $5 per thousand, because those limits are only for their actual operations and not for bonds.
Thank you. So continuing on page 49, this is our metaphor tree for the property tax division. I'd like to focus you first of all on the roots, which are the lower level, and the Department of Revenue is represented by the roots. It nourishes and supports the entire property tax system. The TAP roots show that the department takes a balanced approach to support the system through education assistance and enforcement. And I'll just touch on some of the areas that we actually manage down at the bottom. But in general, we set the standards, monitor programs, provide training, offer direct assistance to individual counties in a variety of areas. One of the areas is continuing education. We provide technical appraisal training classes for the counties. We track and approve statewide continuing education credit requirements for county and state appraisers, and we also facilitate technical forums where we share emerging issues with one another. In timber taxes, we administer taxes paid on timber that's harvested throughout the state. We process and audit tax returns, educate the paying public, collect and distribute timber taxes. And we also have a senior and disabled property tax deferral program where we pay almost 8,500 low-income and senior disabled persons property taxes. These taxes are repaid when the properties change ownership. We also have field office function. We have field appraisal services. We provide technical appraisal assistance to...
Sir?
Representative Cromwell.
May I ask a question? Thank you.
Sure.
Karen, when a property is in a deferral, if when it changes hands, there's not enough proceeds to... Well, I guess, first of all, is the state the number one lien holder on that in a deferral on property tax? And two, if there's not enough proceeds from the sale to cover all of the property taxes, what happens?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I believe that we are the first lien holder, so we do get the proceeds first. But I don't know what happens if there's not enough proceeds. So we'll have to come back to you on that issue.
I'm thinking in particular mobile home kind of situations where it's a real old place and maybe there's just not any enough value in it.
Thank we'll you. Bring that answer back.
Okay. Thank you.
On the field, we'll continue on with the field appraisal services just to give you a flavor of the kinds of things that we do. We do assist the counties in some of their appraisals. We approve their reports so that we ensure that the county values are accurately computed. We review and approve their appraisal plans, and we develop technical appraisal manuals to help them do their work. In general, what the Department of Revenue does is establish and maintain the assessment and taxation standards to ensure statewide uniformity and consistency. And it's really vital for the entire property tax program. The other thing that we do as a part of that function is we administer what we call the CAFA Fund, and that stands for County Assessment Funding Function Assistance Program. This is a grant process that was developed by the legislature in the late 1980s to actually bring a disintegrating property tax system back up to an adequate level. This is a fund that is actually, the dollars come in from recording fees and some of the interest on delinquent property taxes. And These are collected in the counties and then redistributed out to counties on a quarterly basis based on their participation in a percentage to the whole property tax assessment and taxation budget for the entire state. It assures that counties fund the assessment and taxation function at an adequate level. In addition to that, there's also a $5.115 million pass-through, county pass-through, that comes from the general fund, and it too is distributed to the counties. And that's a biennial figure, and it's actually added to the CAFA distribution and goes out to the counties. So that gives you a very broad look at what the property tax system does. On page 50 and 51, we have sister pages that show you what this actually costs. The Department of Revenue's cost to administer the property tax system is $25.9 million, projected for 07-09, and we have 155 full-time equivalents to carry out those functions. Counties have spent $171 million for the biennium that we're in, and they have about 937 full-time equivalents throughout the 36 counties covering these kinds of functions. So now we get into some of the specifics. On page 52, many of you came and visited on Monday and actually saw our cartography department, our mapping department. One of the things that we do in our mapping department is provide day-to-day maintenance for 14 counties, and this map of Oregon shows you the shaded areas, and those are actually the 14 counties that we do the maintenance for. It's on a contractual cost share basis, so they do pay us for that service. We also provide general mapping and geographic information system standard support and training to all of the counties in Oregon, and that's Geographic Information System, is GIS for short. We train new cartographers in the counties, and we also provide leadership to the Oregon Map Program. And I think that when you were over on Monday, you may have heard a little bit about the ORMAP program, but that's what we'll chat about next. Basically, the ORMAP program is a statewide property tax lot map. It's digital, and it's publicly accessible, and it will be continually maintained. We provide the leadership for the ORMAP project, and we do that not only by the department doing that, but we also have an advisory committee that's made up of a number of private sector folks as well as county government folks. And just to give you a flavor of some of the makeup, we have a number of county commissioners. We have some county assessors on the ORMAP advisory committee. We have a city representative. We have a representative from a power company, a title company. We have a county agency that's involved with communications. We have the water department from a state agency. And we have the Oregon Forest Industry Council, a representative from that group. So it's a pretty diverse group who really set the policy on ORMAP. ORMAP also has a grant fund. It comes from a dollar that is added to the recording fees that moves through, again, to the counties. They put forward a grant proposal. The ORMAP Advisory Committee and technical committees take a look at those proposals, approve them, and then the dollars go out to get the work done. So what are the benefits of this tax lot map? Well, first of all, the tax lot map is actually a graphic depiction of the legal description. So it makes sure that many of the deeds that are very confusing is graphically noted and makes sure that taxpayers are only taxed once for their property. The other thing is that it provides a base map that not only supports the assessment and taxation function, but it also supports a number of other potential GIS applications. So you might add streets to it, addresses, county boundaries, and so on, and you could develop emergency response functions for that map. We also have citizens that get our maps online, and just to give you an idea of what ormap.org, which is our website, the kind of activity that it has, In the last month, 47,000 folks actually visited the site. We had 3.5 million hits and 190,000 maps that were actually downloaded. So it's a pretty popular site.
Can I interrupt you? With
a Certainly.
A little bit and then a curiosity question here. What's the responsibility of the other agencies, of other government departments, when there's some kind of a name, when a city renames a street, as an example? If you're going to tie this into any kind of emergency management, et cetera, type of thing on the GIS, the name of the street will ultimately be terribly important. How often is this type of material updated? What's the responsibility of other folks or even the state, other agencies in the state, in making sure some of this naming is corrected or not corrected?
Sure, Jensen, that's a very good question. We deal with the tax lot map itself, and so the street names is not something that's in our purview, but we could certainly check into that. I suspect that that's a Department of Transportation issue, but I really don't know. So we'll get back with you on that. If that's
I know of one incident in particular where a local area fire department spent 15 minutes looking for something because there'd been a renaming of a, and as a consequence, one person didn't make it out of the fire. I think that's a constituent area concern, I guess.
We'll get an answer for you.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, as long as we've taken a break for a question, one of the issues that arose in this with this committee with reference to the Department of Administrative Services budget was the coordination or lack of coordination between all, or the perceived lack of coordination between all of the folks that are doing mapping. And I would welcome your comments on how you're interacting with the Department of Administrative Services, how helpful the counties are in providing you with the data that you need in order to maintain your mapping, what efforts there are underway to coordinate the GIS development in other state agencies, what your role at the table is, in if there is one, in pulling that together. And so I would just welcome your comments on the coordination.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, first of all, counties are very willing to give us their tax lot data, and we have all of that data for all 36 counties, so the Department of Revenue has no problem getting that information. We work very closely with DAS on this ORMAP project, and we're also members of the Oregon Geographic Information Council, which is OGIC, which is kind of the umbrella organization that is tying all of this together. Cy Smith is one of the people very involved with that. There are some issues, overlying issues, that need to be addressed. A number of agencies are doing different things. The counties are not, many counties will allow us to share our information, the tax lot data, with other state agencies. Some of them will not. So there's an issue with data sharing at the state level and at the county level. And I know that the OGIC and SCI have been trying to put forward a legislative idea as far as getting a committee together to have a conversation and actually work out some of these data sharing issues. There's issues of ownership. There's issues of what happens if a county owns the data and other people perhaps change it, and how that all works. And there's also an issue of what's public information and what's not. So there are many issues that actually need to be sorted through. But as far as our relationship with getting our information and putting it on our website, we have no problems at all. Does that answer your question?
Follow-up, Mr. Follow-up. it does in identifying the problems. I want to see the pathways to the solutions. I guess I find it interesting that on many fronts the counties come in and talk about shared partnership with the state and their expectation of what that partnership should and could look like. And yet we hear difficulties, and you just restated it, that the counties won't provide information in some cases because they either sell it or they deem it proprietary or they throw some shield of safety over it. I don't think anybody wants to know the exact latitude and longitude of some police officer's house, but I'm trying to figure out, you've described the problems. What are the steps that you all are taking to resolve some of those problems in the role of, I've lost track of all the acronyms that you just laid out, but at the tables where you are, what role is revenue taking in terms of resolving the problems? You've explained what they are. What are the pathways to try to fix some of this? Because the legislature is being asked to provide money for all of these programs that have the appearance of not talking to each other. And that's the piece that I didn't get in your answer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I appreciate that. I don't know that there's an easy answer to what that pathway is. The Department of Revenue is working very closely with Associated Oregon Counties on this issue. We also work with the individual counties. And the Oregon Geographic Information Council, this is one of their very high important points that they're trying to pull together. The problem is, and I hate to talk about problems again, but everything is so out and not coming together that it's pretty hard to kind of pull it under one umbrella.
One last editorial comment, Mr. Chair.
That's correct.
Then it seems to me that absent some agency or some individual exerting the leadership to try to put it together, I don't know why the legislature would be compelled to keep funding these one-off programs.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, the one thing that I think would be very helpful is to put a work group together, and whether it's legislatively mandated, it probably needs to be in order to get people to come together. But I think that if folks actually got around a table and looked at some of these difficult issues and sorted through them and came to some agreement, that would move us much further ahead than we are now.
Thank you.
Sorry, what? You look like you were.
Thank you. I was just thinking with the Department of Consumer and Business Services that was asking for $5 million seed money and $45 million over a period of time to in their codes division to do something that looks just exactly like what you have in your system. As far as, you know, by tax lot, by easement, by jurisdiction, and it seemed to, in what we saw over at your place the other day, it looked just like what they were asking for. So why should we, again, following up with what Senator Johnson's line of thought, why should we be putting $50 million into that when and you already have it, and why should the Department of Administrative Services be, what was that, $50 million for the Navigator? Pretty soon you're talking real money.
That high.
$30 million GF and $150 from other sources.
It was higher.
We're getting right up around $250 million. Yeah. We could do all kinds of good things with $250 million.
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, my understanding, and I'm not an expert on the DCBS system, but or what they're trying to do, but we did check into that because I know that you chatted with Mark Kinslow about that when you were over at the department. And what we discovered is that they're actually looking for addresses, not tax lots. And so they're using an address file, which is it's quite a bit different. And what they're doing is they're having the county ship in address files. And my understanding is that they're not doing it in a GIS standard format. That's what they've told us.
That's your question.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
I might add just a little bit to the discussion. I hope not making it more confusing. I spoke with Corey Streisinger, the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, about this project, and what she explained to me is that as Karen said, they are trying to build an address-based file so that they can create an electronic permitting system, facilitate an electronic permitting system for folks that need to get building permits or electrical permits or plumbing permits at the local level, and make sure that there's clarity about which permitting authority you need to go to depending upon where the site of the construction project is. Corey said to me that they are definitely not building an independent geographic information system infrastructure. If one becomes available statewide, they will want to use it. But this is simply just an electronic, like a data warehouse data matching file. It's not grounded in a land-based description. Our tax lots are identified by number, not by address. And so we do not have an address file that's connected with the tax lots at this time. And that's partly related to an issue that Karen mentioned in response to Senator Johnson's question, which is there still are issues that come in part from the public records law about our ability to protect information the legislature has determined needs to be protected, like addresses for people whose safety or security might be compromised if their address was publicly available. So some of the issues that need to be worked out are, in fact, administrative. They're coordination. And we've actually been in contact. We had emails going back to 2004 with the Department of Consumer and Business Services inquiring about our mapping project, whether it had the capability of supporting this electronic permitting system, discovering that we didn't have address files, and so constructing something that will serve their purposes but not create the separate infrastructure. I believe the legislature has vested in the Department of Administrative Services the responsibility for coordination on these kinds of issues. And that's the effort that is being made in the Department of Administrative Services. And agencies like Revenue and Transportation, Forestry have been very, very active in the Oregon Geographic Information Council to try to get standards articulated and identify the issues that can be addressed administratively and those that need to be resolved by the legislature as we move more and more into an electronic age where information taken together has so much more impact and power in our ability to do our work that has been disaggregated for up until now. So there's definitely more work to do. And my understanding, having spoken with Director Vall of the Department of Administrative Services, is we've got a lot of work to do in the interim and come back in 2009 with a comprehensive, coordinated approach on applications that would be grounded in and benefit from a geographic information system architecture.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 54, there's a depiction of Oregon separated into all the counties with dates by which the ORMAP project, having the entire digitized statewide map, will be complete. And some of the counties are completed at this point. Some of them will be done in 2012, but 2012 is our outside date. And now we'll move on to why the state actually does some appraisals for the county. That's on page 55. We do two kinds of valuation or appraisals. We have complex properties that we appraise. Typically, these require a very high level of appraisal expertise. So we do the valuation for all of the industrial properties in the state that are valued at over $1 million. And just to give you an idea of what some of those companies are, there's Hynix, there's Intel, there's Boise Cascade, food processors. It's kind of across the gamut. We also value what we call centrally assessed properties, and these are your power, transportation, communication companies, and they're very complicated because not only do they go across county lines, but they go across state lines, and sometimes they're worldwide properties. So they're very complex in design, construction and operation, and they require a high degree of very technical expertise to do the valuations on those. So just a couple of little facts here. In 06-07, our centrally assessed properties, those transportation, power, and communication properties, we had about $12.7 billion in value that we actually valued with 475 taxpayers. And our industrial properties, $15.5 billion with 890 sites that we do there. And on the next page, we have a couple of other sister maps for you. On page 56, by county, you'll see the centrally assessed property roll for the 06-07 tax year and what the market value, or the real market value, is by county for all of these types of property. And then on page 57, you see the same thing for all of the industrial sites for each county. On page 58, I won't go through all of the environmental factors, but we have environmental factors and budget factors that, of course, do impact the property tax system. Resources is certainly the number one environmental factor. County government resources are at risk today due to the elimination of, or potential elimination of, the federal forest dollars. And their resources have really not kept pace with providing essential services, because when we passed a number of these measures in years past, we capped taxes and we also have permanent rates that aren't flexible. So they have some issues with property tax limitations. Also, interest rates are another of our environmental factors. When the interest rates go up, folks don't buy new houses and we don't have recording fees, and delinquent interest typically doesn't get paid. So the County Assessment Funding Function Account, or CAFA, the proceeds in that tend to go down. When interest rates are lower and there's much more activity in the market, interest rates are higher, so you have a higher level of funding at the county level. And global manufacturing environment. If industrial properties may decrease depending on what kind of competition there is globally. So those are just a few of the environmental factors. There are others there that you can take a look at. The budget drivers, I'll just point out a couple. The property tax system is incredibly complex. You overlay the voter-approved incentives, and then you put the statutorily improved exemptions on top of that and special assessments, and it really is a very complex system. And the other element of it that makes it very, very strong as it can be, is the partnership between the state and local governments that really help build that solid foundation. We have two key performance measures in the property tax division. Those are on page 123 and 124 of your book if you wanted to look at them. The first one is the percent of property taxes collected at the county level. And this measure actually tracks how well the counties collect identified property taxes in a timely manner. And this measure is actually in year one. So you see that in year one they collect 94.5% of all property that is taxed. I think it's interesting to also note that by year three, they have collected 99.7% of all of the property taxes. And the reason for that is that if property taxes aren't paid by year three, the counties have the ability and authority to foreclose on the property. So it's a pretty efficient system. The key performance measure for the next one is the percent of assessors' maps migrated to the GIS format. And this is on page 124, and this is the multi-year project, the ORMAP project that we discussed. It's coordinated with the department and state agencies and the counties, and we're developing the statewide digitized tax lot map, and everything will be in geographic information format by 2012, and right now we're at about 40%. So we're moving along on that. And then finally, on page 60, I wanted to close my presentation by talking about the federal forest shortfall. The counties have been receiving funds from the federal government for close to a century. And, of course, this year they have been faced with the possibility of losing that $230 million. That will have a pretty drastic impact on many of the counties. And a number of folks have said, you know, the counties have known that this was coming. They could have prepared for it. Well, when you have your tax rates that have been set permanently, you have counties that have a tax rate of 58 cents per thousand. And there's not a lot of maneuverability within that kind of a tax rate structure to do some long-range planning. Those counties actually had pretty substantial revenue streams when Measure 50 went into effect, and Measure 50 froze the tax levels at that time. So they had dollars coming from the federal forest funds, and that's how come they have those low permanent rates. And there's no flexibility within the Constitution to allow the counties to do any kind of a permanent property tax rate increase when there's significant revenue shortfalls. They can do local levies, and they'd have to take them back to the voters every 5 years. So how does that impact the Department of Revenue? Well, we talked earlier about our having the general supervisory authority over the property tax system for the entire state. We're charged with evaluating whether the counties value property at 100% of the real market value. And if they don't, then we have to point out the deficiencies and ask them to get back to where they need to be. And if they can't do that, then the department has the obligation of going in and taking over those functions. Now, if we go in and take over the function, the county's supposed to pay for that. But if they don't have money in the first place, the things that we can take are the County Assessment Funding Function Assistance Program, the CAFA fund, that can backfill for us. And we can also take any of the non-dedicated shared revenues. So those would be like tobacco taxes, liquor taxes, those kinds of things. But to give you an idea, the CAFA account basically is about 25% of any county's assessment and taxation budget. So if the department needed to go in and take over that function, CAFA would backfill about 25% of our costs. And then the liquor and cigarette taxes, which are probably less than that. So at most, we probably have 40 to 50% of the costs covered. So if we were to have to go in, more than likely, the state would have to help us with some dollars in order to do this work. So there is a bill in Congress right now. Senator Wyden has gotten a bill and moved it through, and it is attached to a bill that may or may not actually pass. But if this bill is successful, it will give the counties a year reprieve at the normal level and then chunk it down for the next 4 years, and then there will be nothing. So at some point, this will need to be faced, and it's, I think, appropriate that we give you the heads up now, even though it may be an issue that we really won't have to financially face for a few years, hopefully. So that completes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I really thank you for your questions.
Questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Karen. Mr. Chair, what I'd like to do now is pick up a little bit where we left off yesterday morning. As you recall, Jack Ogami was reviewing the tobacco program with you, and he was going to also just touch on the other taxes and services that the Department of Revenue provides. So I'm going to step in and do that, and that's on pages 38 and 39 of our presentation materials. We decided we wanted to focus on our three big program areas as we talk to you, the income taxes, the tobacco taxes, and the property tax system. But over the years, the legislature has given us a variety of other programs to manage, and those the additional taxes that we administer are identified on page 38. Those programs don't require a very large number of people to administer, and we do pretty much the same functions that we do for the income tax. Provide forms so that people can report, taxpayers can report what they're supposed to report, collect the dollars, and get those dollars into the Treasury so that they can be routed in the directions that the legislature wants them to go. We also provide tax administration services or other kinds of services to other state and local government agencies. We have a pretty significant program where we collect debt for other state agencies. And in fact, in the 2005 legislative session, we were given some additional staff in order to provide more service for the courts and state agencies for whom we do collections. And we're projecting that, we will collect about $69 million for those customer agencies over the next 2 years. At the last count, I think we had about 270 customers for this program in, between state agencies, local governments, and the courts.
Senator Johnson.
Of the $69 million that you're going to collect, what is, what percentage is that of the outstanding universe of
debt that's owed, assigned?
Owed the state. I'm trying to get a sense of, it runs in my mind from looking at the delinquent accounts report that there are hundreds of millions of dollars of outstanding debt. You have had some assigned. You're collecting $69 million. I'm trying to get the sense of scope of what we're talking about.
I don't have that information right here, but we'll have that for you tomorrow. We the accounts are assigned to us. Agencies have two choices. They can have us use only the ability to offset income tax refunds or to pursue other collection remedies such as garnishment, or attachment of other other property, and they are we have to turn those debts back to them if we're unable to collect on them, and then they do go out into the private sector. But Susan's taking notes, and we'll get that information for you, Senator Johnson. For the courts, actually, the courts are, we show separately, and the court fines and assessments that we collect are $120 million projected over the next biennium. We have contracts with both the Lane Transit District and the TriMet up in the Portland area to collect their transit taxes, which are payroll-based taxes, as well as self-employment taxes on individuals who are self-employed. And we collect about, we project we will be collecting about $477 million for TriMet and Lane Transit District over the next 2 years. The costs for that collection are paid for pursuant to contracts with those organizations. And those taxes piggyback fairly nicely on our withholding system and our estimated tax system. And then finally on page 40, we also administer, Karen mentioned, the Senior and Disabled Deferral Program, which is a property tax deferral program where the state lends to qualifying seniors or disabled people their property taxes each year. The state has a lien against the property for the amount of the property taxes and interest, and then when the property changes hands, we're compensated, and we will be getting the answer to your questions, Representative Kremel, also concerning our priority and what happens if the property is not sufficient, the value in the property is not sufficient to repay the amount that's been deferred. We had, as I mentioned, we had a policy option package last session to add to the other agency accounts program, and our goal was to collect an additional $18 million of debt on behalf of those agencies. We reported our collections in the book through December, but as of the end of January, we actually had achieved the biennial, the goal for the entire biennium. So we will be, and we're continuing to do that work. So we will exceed that target. The other thing I thought we could do today would be to begin to talk about where we're going as an organization, which leads into our policy option packages, and also perhaps we could have a little more detailed conversation about some of our performance measures. If you'll turn to page 62 in the materials, in the course of doing our business planning and development of our continuous improvement strategies, we developed an agency vision several years ago. It has three areas where we are focusing. One is on our work environment. We know that if we give our employees the tools that they need and the training that they need and challenging work to do, that they are the most productive. So we do put some energy into making sure that the work environment that we have is one in which people are at their most productive. We have a high level of emphasis, as Susan talked about particularly yesterday, on in the course of doing tax administration and service of providing education and assistance to those taxpayers who are trying to do what they're supposed to do under the law, and that is most taxpayers. For those who are either not filing at all or who are filing but are either underreporting their liability, we use the tools the legislature's given us and the resources that you've given us to audit and determine what is the correct amount of tax, identify taxpayers who need to be filing, and get those folks into the system. We recognize how important it is because of the fact that we deal with taxpayers' financial information that they consider to be confidential, that we protect the confidentiality of that information, and that we're objective in our administration of the tax laws. And we look around within state government and around the rest of the country for best practices so that we're using the best systems and making the improvements we need to in order to be able to operate efficiently.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I recall that there was a very unfortunate breach of your security not all that long ago. Is that all tidied up and accounted for, and were there any repercussions? People's identity disappeared and used in bad ways?
Senator, Representative Jensen, Senator Johnson, that was, this is the way we handled that. We identified the information that had gone outside the agency. It was a stream of data, it was a keystroke type of a transmission. So we tried to identify every taxpayer whose information was in that stream. We notified them personally, and we offered a credit monitoring service and assistance in identifying any unauthorized use of their information. And that is still in place. To my knowledge, we've had no reports that anyone's information actually was used. The way that the information went out, it would have been fairly difficult to get complete information for any particular taxpayer. But if we could identify even a portion of that information to a specific person, we contacted them. So I think, and then we've taken steps that we believe we needed to take to remedy the problem. Although we've had a lot of conversation within state government generally about how critical it is for employees to understand the risks that we take whenever we use the internet in order to do our business, the only surefire way to prevent that kind of thing from happening is not to use the internet and not to have any connection at all. And there are good business reasons for us to do that, and so we have to evaluate what the risk is and have processes in place in case there is information that is either obtained by someone outside or sent out by someone inside by mistake.
Thank you. Jade?
Okay, why don't we turn to our performance measures, which begin on... One 15 is where our total report begins. First measure is reported on page 119. And Susan talked about these a little more generally yesterday, and Karen talked about the property tax measures today. And there were questions that came up yesterday about, for some of our measures, they aren't as outcome-based as perhaps they might be. And we are continuing to review and evaluate the measures that we use and how helpful they are in operating our programs. And we also use measures that are in addition to these key performance measures. Just as a little bit of history, the performance measure process started with the Oregon Benchmarks and the Oregon Progress Board, and these measures were pretty much put in place in the course of carrying that forward into agencies. And so some of these have been were approved by the legislature 4 years ago, and of course we're all developing in our knowledge and appreciation for using measures. Number one is on page 122, you can see that we've been tracking our the efficiency of our revenue agents in terms of their productivity. We think that what this tells us is whether the new tools that we're giving people are helping them be more effective and productive on a per employee basis. And our target is sloping up in terms of dollars collected per revenue agent per month, because we know that ultimately what you count on us for is dollars getting into the general fund so that you have the resources to fund program. The second performance measure Karen talked about, and this is the this is actually a measure of the effectiveness of the property tax system overall. We do not directly collect property taxes, but we contribute to the system of making sure that the appropriate amount of tax is on the roll and support not only tax assessors but tax collectors in their roles administering the program at the local level. And so we do monitor and watch to see how the tax payments are coming in relative to the total that's assessed, and then making sure that the pieces that the roles that we play in supporting that system are as effective as possible. We've talked about other measures related to the property tax system in terms of value on the roll was one we used to have when the standard was real market value. But with Measure 5, which created a assessed value requirement that diverged from real market value, that measure wasn't helpful anymore. So we're still working on additional measures for the effectiveness of the work that we do in the property tax system. And I think the next one, number three, which is related to the mapping program, is a more meaningful kind of measure for us. It's program focused.
Could I stop us a little
yes.
bit? How much is the what's your sense of this collecting back property taxes, uncollected property taxes? How much of your success is going to be dependent upon the state of the economy? That is, good versus a bad economic climates. Because I'm thinking that one of the variables is ability to pay, which seems to me might be lower during or higher during a period of poor economic conditions as far as people's ability to pay.
Mr. Chair, the economy affects all tax programs, and the way that it would affect the property tax system particularly is if we were in a situation where people were not able to pay their mortgages. Most properties are residential properties. And if people are borrowing, have mortgages, the mortgage companies typically are collecting a portion of the property tax from the property owner with the mortgage payment every month. And mortgage companies have a high level of interest in making sure that property taxes are paid, because they are a first lien against the property ahead of a mortgage. So, but if people are unable to make their mortgage payments and are turning property back to a lender, then that would follow through in perhaps lesser collections. But lenders have a very high interest in making sure that property taxes are paid. So on residential property, within the three-year period, those are being paid.
But not all folks who might fall into this category may have a lien on their a mortgage lien on their mortgage against the property. And I think of some of the properties maybe that Frank Crummell was referring to earlier, older population, retired, fixed income, in a mobile home park that they have long since paid this dilapidated facility off, and but they still have a property tax, and I know these are small dollars here per unit type of thing, but I think we could stretch out to some others. I'm just curious, what type of I realize that the state of the economy has a direct impact on any type of tax you have, greater on some and less on others. And the thing I'm getting at in relationship to that is your key performance measure. It strikes me that there are times that possibly the economy would make it very difficult to impossible to achieve a target that you've set up or established. Then at other times, like we look at the 2004-2005 period draft, when the economy has generally been pretty good, the agency has been successful in overachieving, if that's the right word, in the collection of those. So as we, the legislature, look at and make positive and negative evaluations of the agency, how much of this state of the economy do we have to take into consideration in observing whether the agency is doing what we want it to do or not doing what we want it to do? If I haven't taken too long a way around to get at the question that I'm trying to get to.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the context that you've given is really helpful. The first thing I would say is that this measure is probably more related to the health of the overall property tax system than just the performance of the Department of Revenue. Yeah. And one of the reasons the target isn't ever 100% is that we recognize that there are going to be individual situations where an owner will be unable to pay and the value of the property may be such, or their interest in the property may be such, that they choose not to. And it may be that if the property is personal property and it has very little value remaining, the county might choose not to foreclose. Those things all happen. And in a economic slump, it's probably more likely than in a very healthy time. But at any time, you will always see those kinds of situations. So what I would say to the legislature as we monitor this and as you monitor it is, if we see a significant dip in the percent of property taxes that are actually being collected, that's going to be an alarm that the property tax system is at risk. And not necessarily that what we're doing is effective or not effective. The overall measure.
And I appreciate that answer, and I hope colleagues recognize it. I think this is and you're doing very well here at this point, so it's certainly no negative can come out of our assessment or evaluation, but it strikes me there's potential for someone to look at this and think that the agency is not doing what they're supposed to be doing on it, and it may be beyond the agency's control.
Mr. Chair, that's why we need to have the contextual conversation. That's what puts the performance measure in context.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Karen, I think, did a good job of describing to you what we're measuring in our third performance measure. When we put the mapping project in place, we set a goal. We set four intermediate goals. One was to take what was out there in the counties and in our records, which in a lot of cases was paper, and at least get an image up on a website so that people could go to and see whatever it was that we had on the website. Over time, what we've done is transform those maps from paper into the digital format so that additional information can be connected to them. And so we are marching toward that ultimate goal where we are. Our ultimate target is 100%, every property tax lot being digitally represented on the Internet in a way that the maps are seamless between counties, which in some cases they are not right now, and so that the data set can be used by others when they have information or an application that requires an understanding of what's going on the ground. So we're on track toward our target. We use a lot of tools for this one. Again, this is the outcome that we want. But this too was dependent on the economy. When counties don't have a lot of resources, they're establishing their priorities very, very carefully, just as the legislature does. And sometimes we'll see fewer applications for grants, or maybe a stretched out strategic plan for achieving goal 4. But overall, this allows us to monitor how we're doing and allows our advisory group, as they look at policy, on how they recommend to us that we spend those dollars that are coming in for the mapping project to achieve the greatest return.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cromwell.
Couple of questions relevant to this. I think one is kind of the basic question when you're looking at a performance measure so what? I mean, so what difference does it make? And I was, in listening to you and reading through the material and trying to get a sense of why this is something that's extremely important and is on the agency's performance measure list. The other question that I have with this is we were talking earlier about the ability to for DCBS, for example, to have the address files as opposed to because in my experience in local government, local governments can actually go either way. They can either go by subdivision and tax lot number, or they can go by address. But Mike, I'm wondering if it wouldn't be possible for DCBS to, instead of kind of reinventing the wheel, taking the GIS system that you have and overlaying the addresses so that, I'm pretty positive the technology is already there to be able to do it. But I think it goes back to the question of so what. And I understand the public having access to the information and easy access to the information. So, for example, if I wanted to look up the meets and bounds on my piece of, on my house, being able to go into this website and find the tax lot, which I assume probably does show the meets and bounds on it. That's really terrific. But from a standpoint of the of the agency itself, I'm still trying to get my hands around why it's important.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell. Property tax system rests on what is the property that is subject to tax. The statute says that the property tax roll, the record of what is taxable, has to have a description of the property that's subject to tax. What are the improvements on the property, and are there any trees on it, or other characteristics that are related to its taxable value? And we have to be sure, as Karen said, that when you get your tax statement, it's only for the property that you own, not 4 or 5 feet into your neighbor's property, or less than what you own. And accurately described. So the so what for us is we need to make sure that across the state the counties have accurate maps on which the tax bills are based, so that values are correct, the attributed improvements in fact are there, and that we've identified the location of that property with respect to the taxing districts in which it's located. So if you live in a city, you will probably be in, obviously, the city taxing district, a school district, and if you have a separate elementary and high school, it would be two districts. You're probably inside a community college district. And you may be, if you're not in a city, you may be in a street lighting district or a fire protection district, or even a hospital district if you have a community hospital that's supported in part by property tax. So it's crucial for the system for us to know what's the property, who owns it so they get the right bill, and what are the taxes that apply to that property. So the map is essential. The paper maps can't be updated as quickly as a digital map can be. So it creates more efficiency in the property tax system for the assessors and the tax collectors to have the digital map be available for them. The accessibility on the web, publicly accessible, that's kind of gravy. It's an additional value that we're able to create by having this digital base available for other uses. But essentially it is. It's all about the accuracy of the property tax system and people getting their bills right.
Okay. Thank you. That's a very good explanation.
On your second question, related again to the project that the Department of Consumer and Business Services is talking about, one of the early issues that we've had to, that we have struggled with respect to what is the information that we include with our tax lot map base, is whether we include addresses. There's been a lot of concern expressed by counties about the fact that there are people in law enforcement, people in the judiciary, people who have restraining orders and other things who would be very, very concerned about their address being connected to a map that's available to anybody on the internet. And so so the advisory group recommended that the standards for what's on the maps not include a street address, that it include a tax lot identifier, which is really what the county needs. The county has in a separate file an address. The local units that do permitting have addresses and know what addresses are inside their boundaries. And my understanding, again, from talking to the folks at the Department of Consumer and Business Services, is that they're working with the local governments to build the address file and connect the address file to jurisdictional boundaries, political jurisdictional boundaries, so that when someone's making application for a permit or a set of permits with respect to a particular property, the permit applications are getting to the right permit jurisdiction. It is certainly an application that would be capable of using a GIS framework, but it isn't dependent on one. And the way that they're building it now, they're building it with that the ability to connect, but it isn't needed for them to be able to do it, my understanding. So it's not an overlapping development of a whole architecture that that Department of Administrative Services is taking the lead on developing. We're all developing data sets that can hang on that architecture. It's kind of like leaves going on a tree. Department of Administrative Services needs to build the tree, and we've got lots of leaves waiting, waiting to put on the tree. Is that responsive?
Mm-hmm. That's fine. Thank you.
On key performance measure number 4 yesterday, Senator Whitsitt raised the question that this looked a lot more like a workload or an output kind of a measure than an outcome, and he's absolutely right. We've talked a lot in the agency about how to better measure how responsive we are to taxpayers in when they ask for help from us. Right now, our ability to count what we do is much better, I think, and we're more used to that than talking about, you know, sort of what's the outcome and how do we establish a measure for the outcome. But we're working on those benchmarks, and what we'd like to do is, assuming that the February special session is focused more on finance and budget issues, would be to come back with some alternative measures that would be a little more directly related to the outcome of high quality customer service, if that's acceptable. But we really do want to keep working on this one and get more at that outcome, which is the quality service to taxpayers. Measure 5, again, is Susan talked quite a bit about 5 and 7. These are productivity measures for our employees. We are trying to be sure that we, as we develop our filing enforcement tools, that we're touching more taxpayers who ought to be filing and getting them in the system more quickly. And so this measure is also, we think we need to look at it again and remodel it a bit, and would propose to report back in February and with some refinements on that. But where we had been going with this in the past was we had been given resources over several different biennia to really try to get at the issue of people who aren't in the system at all. They don't file. We talked yesterday a little bit about the really, really difficult ones, which are the people who not only aren't filing but aren't interacting in the economy in a way that we can find through other information. They don't have bank accounts. They're paid in cash. They pay their bills in cash or by money order. And so there's not a data set that we have access to that allows us to identify those folks. And so we are continuing to try to develop strategies to get people who are behaving in a like way to change that behavior. But we do have, from soup to nuts, people who have a catastrophic illness in the family who don't file and then don't file and we find them and finally get them caught up. People who, for one reason or another, just haven't and gotten out of the habit, and then other people who intentionally do not. So that's kind of all wrapped up in this one measure.
Better, Richard.
Hey, Jensen, Ms. Harchenko, I noticed in your policy option packages there's primarily position enhancements there. And I was wondering, in looking at your key performance measures, number 12 is up to date at 2006. Number 4 is actually at 2004, and the rest of them are at 2005. I wonder if it would be possible by the time we have the work session to see those figures through 2006.
We'll certainly try to get data through calendar 2006 for you. My understanding is that some of the reporting requirements that we have through the Progress Board are fiscal year-based. But we'll do what we can to update these as current as possible. And were the specific ones that you wanted the updates, or everything we can do?
Well, particularly the ones that are keyed to output.
So 10, 11, and 4? Or
4 is not.
Are you thinking about specific ones? 4 is just accounting contacts, and we have to rebuild this measure, and that's going to take us.
Well, 4, I think is an appropriate measure personally. Uh-huh. But I was thinking, well, actually, like dollars collected per revenue agent, percent of property tax collected. I mean, all those are measures that are important. But there, 2005 doesn't tell us really what we're doing now.
Okay, we will see if we can find updated information for the measures that are at a 2005 fiscal year, and see what we can provide for you by the work session. If we can't, we'll explain why.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Harchenko, do you have any idea, and maybe you can't even estimate this, what is the universe? What's the size of the black economy in Oregon? Those people who are being paid cash, who do all their transactions in cash, money orders, the way you described it. And what is the loss of revenue to the state for that? Do you have any idea what that might be?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, one of the challenges that we have when we talk about the underground economy is that it is underground and it is cash only. And so we don't. There aren't any data sources that we can use to directly measure it. Some of that underground economy is actually related to illegal activity, and so there's not any voluntary reporting by people of where they're either violating the law in a criminal enterprise or just failing to comply with civil requirements because of the consequences. So measuring that as a component of the total gap in compliance is, I think, not possible. What we do have are estimates that have been done by the Internal Revenue Service about the overall gap, some information that we've developed about what we think the relative size of the gap in compliance is in terms of dollars in the income tax system, and what the sectors are that contribute to that. But I don't think anyone has been able to measure a cash-based economy where people are intentionally staying below the radar and not participating in Social Security programs or unemployment or paying their taxes or having any withholding.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a really dumb question? Because
if you want,
you know, my memory is not serving me correctly here or well. When Senator Whitsitt was referring to the performance measures and you were mentioning the fiscal years, we are currently in the 07 fiscal year. Is that correct?
We're in the fiscal year that ends June 30, 07.
And that's considered the 07 fiscal year.
I believe that's right.
Okay. I just wanted to
That's one of the things I struggle with, too.
Yeah, I'm always trying to remember, are we in the fiscal year of 06 that ends in 07, or are we in the fiscal year of 07 that ends in 07? That began in 06.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Can we find out who's on second here?
So,
I don't know if I'm third.
Mr. Chair, as I said, we will do everything we can to bring some up-to-date data. Some of the information, if it's coming from counties or other sources, we just may not have because of data lag. But we will update as much as we can.
May I ask another question, Mr. Chair?
Perfect.
Thank you. With regard, Elizabeth, with regards to, for example, the performance measures where, for example, the personal income tax and corporate tax cases closed per revenue agent per month, and the PI tax assessments issued per employee per month, are those going to be based on a tax year or fiscal year?
Well, the measure itself is going to be based on, I think, is this fiscal year, Susan?
This is
fiscal year data based on the people that were working during the fiscal year and the effectiveness with which they dealt with their caseload, basically.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Let me, since we've got a pretty short amount of time left, Susan talked quite a bit about number 7 yesterday, and what we believe that measure tells us is how effectively we are convincing folks who haven't filed returns and need to do so. And Mr. Chair, this one I think does reflect the potential impact of the economy. When people are working and have sources of income, they're more responsive to our entreaties to file and to pay than if they don't. But the other issue that affects this is the strategies that we're using at any given time in the filing enforcement program. We've had a focus initially on trying to identify a lot of taxpayers and contact them, and then if they did not respond, to get an assessment out, because we did learn that for some people having a bill is what finally gets them to call us. And so that for a while we had a surge of a lot of assessments going out. We've been trying to pay a little more attention to working with the folks that we have assessments out for and getting their matters resolved and not issuing new assessments. So that the number 7 is going to go up and down sort of based on where we are, what particular strategies we're using to work with folks who haven't filed. Number 8, I think, is one of our other measures that's related to customer service, and that's how quickly we're able to get refunds out the door. You'll see that that's a downward sloping target. We want it to be a shorter period of time. And for the processing season, which is for the 2005 tax year, which we processed a year ago now, during 2006, we slipped quite a bit, and it was because we had been working for about 3 years to rewrite our personal income tax processing system and implemented that. And last season was the first season in which that was in production. And there were bumps along the way and some things that you only find out once you put something into production. And we were also a little late getting started. So this season, it's going to come back down. And I think we're much closer to our target now, although that average is going to shift because the large volume of returns that are going to be coming in over the next couple of weeks are going to slow us down a bit. But I think that you'll see that after this season is over, we'll be coming back down on that performance measure. Number nine. Well, we talked to you a little bit about this yesterday, and it's also we're going to be talking to you about it tomorrow as we talk about our electronic document management policy option package. The higher the proportion of electronic returns we get, the less it costs for us to run a season. The fewer seasonal employees we need, the faster and more accurately data gets into our system, the faster we're able to generate refunds and bank dollars. So although it's a volume measure, it's an indicator that as we take this and look then at the rest of what we're doing, we should also be seeing a reduction in our cost of processing and our speed and an increase in our speed of processing. Number 10 and number 11, I wanted to talk a little bit about, they are focused more on our staff. The revenue department, like I think most of state government, is in the knowledge business, and our employees are the way that we get our work done. And so the work environment is something, as I mentioned when I talked about our vision statement, that's very, very important to us. It's a measure, I think, of the outcome of the quality of management of the agency from the perspective of our staff, and we've seen a correlation between a high level of satisfaction on the part of employees and their production and productivity in doing their work. So although it's not a direct measure of an outcome externally, it's a very key part of the way that we perform the services that we perform and get our work done, and so it's something that's very important to us as managers to have. Number 11, which is the training, Susan talked about this just a little bit yesterday. One of the things I heard when I started as director was, particularly from our technical staff, our auditors, is we need technical training in order to be able to keep up on law changes and other things. And so we have a target of trying to be sure that we're giving people the tools they need in order to do their work. The other thing that's really important is as we develop additional systems and expect people to be able to use those systems effectively and efficiently, we have to train them on how to use them. So training is a key element for us, again, on the productivity of our staff. And we don't look at it in isolation. We look at it in connection with the others that are more outcome-related in terms of the productivity of the employees. And then the final one, I think Susan mentioned, this is a measure that was developed collectively by state agencies under the guidance of the Department of Administrative Services on customer satisfaction. We're currently focusing our effort to gather this data from people who have come to us for assistance and have this is a fairly new measure, so we're still looking for ways to make sure we're gathering the information well and then figuring out what it is that their expectations are that we need to work more on meeting. So are there any other questions or comments or concerns about the performance measures? We also will be talking about some specific measures that we think will help us evaluate the effectiveness of the policy option packages that we've included, that were included in the governor's recommended budget. And we'll go over those tomorrow with you when we go over those policy option packages.
One other question for me, since we've got 30 seconds or so left, actually 60, I think. I hate to waste your time. curiosity, in looking at these uncollected taxes type of thing, and also in looking at somewhat the underground economy, probably can apply in both cases. How much do we coordinate with, say, an agency like DMV, where we are looking at the purchase of big ticket items, automobiles being typically a big ticket item, to identifying whether or not somebody who has just purchased a new 700 level BMW and you know, shows an income of gross income of $18,000 a year to get and I guess this might be more into your audit perhaps function or performance. Is there any of that type of activity taking place that we can use within the state agency's information gathered by other agencies as to whether people are paying their tax bill?
Mr. Chair, when we develop our strategies for compliance, we look at what is the data that would be available to us from other state agencies in a form in which we can use it, and with identifying information that helps us connect it to taxpayers. One of the limitations that that we have is not all agencies are able to ask for Social Security numbers, which is the primary tax identification number that's used by individuals. So, and we don't have a data warehouse capacity right now to take just a data file from motor vehicles, for example, of all new registrations and match it up against taxpayers. And since there's not any requirement, to my knowledge, that the value of a vehicle be reported to motor vehicles, since the registration fee is a flat dollar amount, it would be a needle in a haystack kind of a search. We do use motor vehicle information to try to locate people if we have a debt that we need to collect, and it's very, very helpful information.
Interestingly, my automobile is registered by year as a 96 by manufacturer Lincoln, by type of Lincoln as town car.
But not value.
Well,
96 Lincoln town car? I want to ride.
He's driving.
That's a relatively simple item to get as far as value is concerned on that. It's not necessarily there by DMV, but if you have that information, it wouldn't be that much trouble, I don't think, to overlay it on Kelly Blue Book type of valuation of the am I not tracking?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that what you're describing is an activity that we would use what we call a data warehouse, where you do an analysis and an overlay of data from a variety of different sources to try to build information about taxpayers. And we do not have that capacity at this time. We try to take advantage of information that from our business partners, the Department of Employment, Department of Consumer and Business Services, When we're doing collection work, we do use motor vehicle information to find people if we don't have a good address. But we right now do not have the applications developed to do a lot of data matching from a wide variety of different sources to try to estimate what people's income level or capacity might be.
Okay, I appreciate the answer, and I'm not even sure how far I would want to go that way in playing Big Brother. I mean, that's sometimes a controversial.
But we're always looking for strategies that we think are going to give us the greatest return for the investment of time and effort and resources. And staff is always thinking about, Is there some potential value in terms of influencing behavior or determining compliance by using a particular strategy? And we've had the conversation about data warehouse in the agency before, but we're not at the point yet where we've got the resource to devote to that. We've got other strategies we think are giving us good return.
Well, in order to devote the resources to that, obviously it needs to be something you can. We can try to pencil out that the return is going to be greater than the cost that goes into it, other than, of course, for some of our satisfaction, that nobody gets off for a free ride. Okay. Thank you for your
time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we are adjourned.